Now, live from the WOAI studios in San Antonio, it's the Joe Pags Show.
This is the Joe Pags Show. To talk to Joe, call 800-383-9624 or go to joepags.com. And now, it's Joe Pags.
Hey, great to have you. Wonderful radio stations across the land. iHeartRadio, JoePags.com, also Newsmax TV. It's a pleasure to have you along for the ride on the Joe Pags Show on a Thursday. I'm feeling all right. Say what?
Seems I got to have a...
That's Carrie Lockie, my news anchor. Pain in our collective rear end.
No,
hey, Carrie's
no,
going?
Just yours. Strangest
dream. No, I think pretty much everybody, if you think about it.
No, I don't think so.
I've actually checked.
You've
most
checked
people
with
agree with what I just said. Mm-hmm. It's Thursday, almost Friday. The weekend's almost here. Here's how we do it. Look, I get that it's getting colder out. I really don't care. You still have to roll it down and sing along. We're feeling all right on the Thursday. Let's go. Oh. No chair turns there.
I'm not feeling the jet myself.
No. Yeah, see, it's a lot of the jet lag is what it is. Who's getting some harmony?
Feeling all right.
A little better. Come on.
I'm not feeling too good myself.
Bop, 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 bum. Bop, bop. It's how we do.
Blaming
all right, so glad to have you here. There's a lot to get. What's that? I could hear you.
What's so
that?
You're still blaming
were you
that on
sniping?
The jet lag? I was, yeah.
Oh, see, this is why I say what I say about you in the beginning.
Why are you so mean to? Why are you so mean to the lady? Why are you so mean to the girl?
I still get those every once in a while. People have been listening to the show for a while understand that you get exactly what you deserve on the program.
No, that's
which is a lot of respect, and I ask you to read the news stories and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the jet lag. I mean,
right?
Come on,
from last week.
You know
week.
That I'd be singing it better than that. I mean, last week. No matter. Listen, there is no limit on jet lag.
Oh, okay. Excuse me. I didn't know that.
See, I have no idea because of the way this the resolution is on this monitor, why it's making it small like this, and that bothers me. Because I want to show this video. Karina, do me a favor and find me a different source for that video from the CMAs from last night, if you don't mind. Or I'll just try to do it quickly here. I could probably do it here. I didn't watch the CMAs. I don't know much about the CMAs. Carrie, do you watch or know about the CMAs?
I really don't. No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge country music guy, although growing up, and my family members know this, growing up, without a doubt, I was a huge Johnny Cash guy.
Well, who isn't now? Everybody's going to love Johnny Cash. Yeah.
I mean, Johnny Cash, the man.
Mm-hmm.
So the Independent Journal Review, and you're going to see their logo all over this. It's a cool news outlet. I think they do a very good job. I don't like that they put their stuff all over this video, but they are the source where we get this. And Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood, I think, have been hosting this for a long time now, right?
That's right.
Isn't it 3 or 4 years running?
It's like 10 years, I think.
Is it that long? See, I would not. Again, not a country music guy.
Yeah.
I think they've got great chemistry. I think they do a pretty good job. I know that when they were making fun of Obamacare, I thought it was hilarious. So they came out last night on the CMAs. Is it the Country Music Academy Awards? Because they're saying CMA Awards.
Country Music
It can't be Country Music Awards, can it?
I think it's the Country Music Association Awards.
See, I don't know. You want to talk Johnny Cash? Because I love Johnny Cash. But other than that, not a huge country guy. But they're funny in their opening. I guess some people are freaking out. Now, Karina, you're the country bumpkin on the staff. You love all this country music. Are people freaking out because they dared say something about President Trump last night?
Yeah, so it started, I guess, when we were ending the show yesterday, and I had about two or three people call in saying that they were really upset about the way they were making fun of Trump. But I hadn't watched it yet. I didn't watch it till today.
Now, I'm going to play it in a second on television. I'll let the people listening hear it on radio. Do you think that it was disrespectful to him?
No, because I think they talked about Hillary also.
Yeah, they went after everybody. They went after the Democrats and Hillary and how the Democrats have nothing. And then, they make fun of him. They make fun of him tweeting.
And, like, in the past, they've done it, too. They always, like, touch a little bit. They do, like, one song on that's, like, political.
Right. So, I mean, I got to be honest, I don't get the outrage. And keep in mind, I'm a fan of President Trump. Yeah, he and I obviously tied. Hello, have you seen the pictures? Mm. So, I mean, I don't take offense to this. I mean, he's the president of the United States. He is open to be made fun of. And the fun they're making is kind of cutesy. I mean, it doesn't really bother me, but I'll play the segment for you. Newsmax, I'm going to take it now, and this already has all sorts of... I'm criticizing it, so we're allowed to show it. All right, so here we go. Put this over here, put that over there, and I'll put it on. I'm just gonna start playing it, and you tell me what you think about this. I don't know. Here we go. Carrie and Brad take him at President Trump at the CMAs.
Hold on, so we can't even do like, well, way down yonder on the Scaramucci. That doesn't work?
No.
It's funny.
No.
Way down yonder in the Scaramucci. Come on. Well, what is it? It was the Chattahoochee, right?
That's all?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Scaramucci, Brad. No.
What about like, well, she's gone, gone, gone.
No.
Gone, gone, gone.
Uh-uh.
Oh, no, she wrote a memoir, Hillary's back. Can't do it.
Creative.
It's funny. That's funny.
But no.
So that means, like, no more Hold Me Close for Bernie Sanders.
No, can't do it.
No Harper Valley DNC.
Nope.
Not even Stand By Your Manafort?
Definitely not.
What are we going to do then?
Come on, man. Gary, this is a good comedy, is it not?
It's fine. I don't have a problem with it.
Well, now, the song they actually do is going to be about President Trump and his tweeting. And look, it's fair game. The first question out of my face to President Trump was, is that really you tweeting? You know, and he laughed about it.
Well, I mean, clearly, we can't say or play anything. So, I guess to present our first award of the night, the stars of the new movie. What are you doing, Brad?
Oh, I'm definitely not doing this one. Right now, he's probably in his PJs, watching cable news, reaching for his cell phone.
Really?
We talk about it all the time. He's in his robe, he's watching Fox and Friends, and he's tweeting. How is this somehow... By the way, Karina, I'm sorry, but I'm going to ask for phone calls as we're doing this. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. I want to know if people really are somehow offended by this.
Right now, he's probably asking Siri, how in the hell do you spell Pocahontas?
It's funny as hell. Come on.
Well, here we go.
In the middle of the night, from the privacy of a gold-plated White House toilet seat, he writes... Little Bob Corker, NFL, and Kofi.
Kofi!
Kofefi?
Kofefi?
Kofefi.
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 Kofefi. Kofefi.
Thank you. And it's fun to watch, yeah, that's for sure, till little Rocket Man starts a nuclear war, and then
maybe next time he'll think before he tweets.
I mean, seriously, I'm going to go back to Carrie here, guys. Is that really offensive?
I don't think so. That's kind of funny.
I mean, based on her song, he'll think before he cheats.
Audience loved it.
Think before he tweets. I mean, I did a whole freaking parody on Covfefe. It was hilarious. Actually, it was your idea, was it not?
I think it was, wasn't it?
Wasn't that the one that you came up with?
Yeah.
Oh, look, we have that picture on your face again. I love that. All right, so we're going to take some phone calls on this. I'm not offended. I didn't watch the show. From what I understand, later Carrie Underwood sang this beautiful Christian song, and everybody's applauding her for not, you know, fearing being a Christian on national television. And I don't get it. I mean, that was mild. That was nothing. I mean, what people have said about President Trump, some of it is really, really nasty. This is funny. Karina, when they were calling in, were they just beside themselves or what?
Yeah, they said that they were switching the channel, and I think a couple people have already called in that aren't happy with it.
Come on, dude. Yeah. All right, when we come back, we'll take some of those phone calls. Bottom of this hour, it's going to be Will Hurd. He's a congressman, Republican from the great state of Texas. He was alongside Vice President Pence and Attorney General Sessions, and I believe we had the governor there last night, or the lieutenant governor, and all sorts of dignitaries. Henry Cuellar in Sutherland Springs, Texas, the site, of course, of that massacre. And I just wanted to sort of get his feeling of the get-together, the vigil, what he's hearing from the people of the community. Plus, we talk about tax reform, which looks like the Senate might again obstruct the president from their own party. So we'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. Next hour will be Stephen Mansfield. He wrote a book called Choosing Trump. I think it's called Choosing Trump. I should probably know that. I think it's Choosing Donald Trump. And it's about the evangelical vote and how he ended up getting it. And how do they feel about him a year after the election? So that much more coming up. But when we do come back, look, if you're offended by that, I'll listen to you. Even if you're not, I'll listen to you. I think it's good clean comedy. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. Stay here. Art.
WOAI is an iHeart radio station.
She's a hot button, baby. There ain't no dance she couldn't do.
That's my jam right there.
She's my groovy little baby.
Sorry, what? No, don't do that.
No.
You're saying don't do that?
No.
Is that what that was? Is that you saying do not do that?
That was me saying
Why do I have to get rid of a picture that's over your picture now? Why is this happening, Carrie Lockie? Okay, we got it back.
Okay.
We're good to go. We moved the picture. We have your smiling face back on the screen. Okay. Bottom of the set will be Will Hurd. He's a U.S. representative of the great state of Texas at the vigil last night in Sutherland Springs. We'll talk about what he found out, the people, what they've said, the family members, the neighbors. I also asked him a question that I want to know an answer to. Is the media being respectful? Now, the locals, I know, are. And I've watched all the coverage from the local TV stations. I've listened to our coverage, certainly at our radio station, WOAI, our flagship, a great news organization, great news department. We've had it for years and years. We've been very respectful. But some of the outside media comes in, and I'm hearing stuff. Carrie, I'm hearing, rumblings that they're just not being as respectful as they could be.
That's pitiful. And need no better than that. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you're being welcomed into a community that, has fewer than 700
tragedy.
People in it.
Yeah.
Right, and they're suffering such a great loss. Be respectful.
Absolutely.
Don't act like you'll act in your normal day elsewhere, okay? Come here and be respectful. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. So, Carrie, you and I have decided not disrespectful. I mean,
it's
went after both sides of the aisle.
No,
they made fun of Covfefe, and the president's made fun of that himself. I'm not really sure I understand why it was offensive, but some people think it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got full phone lines. People want to be heard about the CMAs. If you're just joining us, you missed it. Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood, they do the opening at the CMAs. They co-host the award show. You're saying as long as 10 years. I thought it was 3 or 4 years. I have no idea.
I want to say 10.
Okay. So they host the show. Great chemistry. They're very funny. The 1 year there was outrage on the left because Carrie Underwood was sitting there with a computer and she was complaining that it was just a little spinny wheel because she couldn't get on the Obamacare website. Oh, boy, the left had a fit.
Mm-hmm.
She's a big, fat racist. Racist! So last night they went after Hillary Clinton, the DNC. Then they went after the president. And it's all fair game. It's okay. Let me go to the phone lines and see what people think, though. Bob is in New York. Bob, what do you think? Hi.
Hey, girl. How are you?
Living the dream, my friend. Talk to me.
Okay. I watched the show last night. I thought it was awesome. I'm a huge Trump fan. I voted for him, and I thought it was hysterical. I thought it was really good-natured humor. It was not mean. It was not, nasty. It was good.
I think the president himself would have laughed at it. Now, I doubt he saw it because he's in China, but I'll bet he would get a kick out of it.
Oh, I think he would have, without a doubt. I thought it was great, especially about the PJs and the tweeting and stuff like that. It was
right.
Fantastic.
Exactly right, Bob. I'm telling you, I think Bob is onto something. But, Carrie, I'm told some people on the line aren't so happy.
Okay, let's see what they have to say.
Let me go. Jamie's online, too. What's going on? Hi.
Hey, Joe. Yeah.
Hey.
I'm up here in Elgin, not too far from you down in San Antonio. And
okay.
I'm a decorated combat vet, Southern boy. Let's go 2-7.
Thank you.
Voted for Trump and support him all the way, but it's real simple. Any of these country artists that want to take on the vets or our organizations that who back Trump, we can easily dig to kick them real easily. And I think
well, what did they do? What did they do that would get them Dixie chicked?
Well, all they got to do is be derogatory toward the president.
So, all right. So I played what they did last night. I didn't watch it live. I played what they did last night. You think that's like the Dixie Chicks in London, England, saying that we're embarrassed that George W. Bush is from Texas? You think that's the same thing, really?
No. I'm just saying, any of these artists that do want to go that route, like the Dixie Chicks, they'll end up being just like them if they go that far.
Oh, Jamie, I hear you. What I'm asking is, in the audio that I played that I'm sure you heard on the radio or you saw on TV or whatever, do you think they went too far?
No, not last night. Not last night.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is everybody, it's not a secret that Brad Paisley was buddy-buddy with Obama, so.
Yeah. Oh, I have no idea who Brad Paisley likes or doesn't like. They made fun of the Hillary Clinton. They made fun of the DNC. I think that it was equal opportunity making fun of. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they cover their butt.
All right, man. Jamie, I appreciate your service. All right. I guess I'm not getting it, Carrie.
Hmm.
He immediately went Dixie Chicks. And again, I'll reiterate what I just said.
Compare the two.
Right. The Dixie Chicks back in like, what year could that have been? 2004 or 5 or something?
Maybe.
They were in, might even been before that. They were in, I know it was before that, somewhere between 2000 and 2004, probably. They were in England and doing a concert, and they said that we're embarrassed that the president is from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. People started, steamrolling their CDs. That was it. Dixie Chicks took a huge hit. I don't see any comparison here. They didn't say they were embarrassed of the president. They didn't say that the president is stupid. They just took stuff that already was out there about him tweeting. He makes fun of it himself. You know, when I asked him about tweeting, you remember what his answer was? Because I said, Mr. President, my listeners want to know, my viewers want to know, is it really you doing all those tweets?
Say the good ones, I think?
He said, it is me. Well, the good ones. And then he laughed.
Yeah.
So, Carrie, thank you for remembering. Wow, you
You're
actually
welcome.
Paid attention.
I listened. Yes.
Well, for once. Yeah. Normally, you're drunk by then, though. But it'd be.
Don't say that.
It takes a little longer to get drunk. By the 7 o'clock hour, you're drunk. But, you know, he makes fun of it. He accidentally tweeted kafefe when he meant to say coverage by the media or something. And it was hilarious. Look, he makes fun. His son, Don Jr., I believe, you know, started some hashtag Bigly. When the president doesn't say Big Lee, he says Big League. But they made fun of it. So I think the guy can roll with the punches. I don't get the angst over this, to be honest with you. Back at it, going to be line five. Joe is in Minnesota. Joe, what do you think?
Country music artists are just like anywhere else. You got Democrats, you got Republicans. Brad Paisley is a Democrat. I assume Kerry is a Republican. And those two are just fantastic. It has been 10 years. And every year they do jokes like that. And evidently there was a dust up prior to the CMAs where the reporters were told not to ask the artists on the red carpet about politics and shootings and stuff like that. But then there was a whole bunch of feedback. So that got nixed, which is kind of what led into that first initial joke where they were not supposed to talk about things like that.
I got you.
But I just thought it was funny as all get out.
It was, hey Joe, listen, it was funny. And I think that artists making fun of politicians and vice versa, that's the way it used to be in this country, be honest with you. And then Obama was president for 8 years, and you couldn't say anything because then you'd be a racist. All right, back at it. Steve, Cincinnati, make it fast, Steve. I got about a minute. Go.
I just wanted to say, I thought it was funny, and I don't really think they were badgering Trump too much because They mentioned Rocket Man as being the perpetrator of starting the nuclear war, not Trump.
Which right.
If it was a Democrat
right.
or a Hollywood type on there, they would be saying that Trump starts the nuclear war and Kim Jong whatever is the innocent.
I think his name is Kim Jong Fat. If you listen to them in context, they really were saying, you know, watch how you tweet or else Rocket Man will start the nuclear war. So they were sort of saying he could have. But at the same time, look, they used Rocket Man. They said Pocahontas. They said in your PJs on the gold toilet seat. Come on, man. That was all good, clean fun. Let me just say, lighten up. Lighten the hell up if you're really freaking out over that. 1-800-383-9624, JoePags.com. When we come back, it'll be Representative Will Hurd. He's a Republican from the great state of Texas. He was at the vigil last night along with the vice president and the governor and other dignitaries. He's got a lot to report on that and more. Stay here.
This is the Joe Pags Show.
.com. Thanks for tuning into the Joe Pags Show, featuring Joe Pags, Gary Locke, Karina Medlin, and Polo Cuellar. Live from San Antonio, this is the Joe Pags Show on News Radio 1200 WOAI.
Great radio stations across the land, iHeartRadio, JoePags.com, also Newsmax TV. It's the Joe Pags Show. Glad to have you here, and also glad to have Republican from the great state of Texas, it's Representative Will Hurd. Will, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks. It's always great to be on with you.
At Hurd on the Hill. Go follow him on Twitter right now. Former CIA guy. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on if we have time. But I, of course, have to start with not only the biggest story in our area, where it's only 25 miles or so from where we are, but also the biggest story in the country. And there are reporters in South Korea and in China asking the president about this. Of course, the mass shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas. Will, were you aware of Sutherland Springs before this happened?
You know, I had heard the name before, but it was not something that it wasn't a place that I had been. It's outside of my district.
Yeah.
It's Henry Cuellar is the representative for that area. But no, I wasn't familiar with it the way I am now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Elmendorf and Floresville, and you've got all sorts of great areas there. And this is just another wonderful little central South Texas town. And to hear it rocked this way, just it boggles the mind. When you heard about it, what was the first thing you thought?
The first thing I thought was, how is there still hate in people, you know, at this, you know, in 2017? And, you know, you automatically think about the families that are going to get a phone call that no family ever wants to get. And then you think about the families also where someone is injured and is not necessarily out of the woods.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, the tension and that a family would feel about something like that is just absolutely, it's heartbreaking.
And we're getting to the point to where I'm going to go to a concert tonight. Am I going to make it? I'm going to go to church on Sunday. Am I going to make it? And I know that these happenstances are just a very, very small number of instances compared to what we do as 350 million Americans every day. But still, something like this jumps out at you, smacks you in the face, and says you're not safe in the house of the Lord. You're not safe riding a bike down a path in New York. You're not safe at a concert in Las Vegas. As a former CIA guy, a law enforcement guy, what would you say to my listeners and viewers when it comes to heightened awareness of where you are? Look, I'm singing a hymn out of the hymnal. Will I have to worry about is my gun ready?
No, it's unfortunate that we have to think about these things in this day and age. But situational awareness and being aware of your surroundings and the fact that something like this could potentially happen, and you could be the most prepared and still not be ready for one of these kinds of situations. And you know, it's mind-boggling for me to think how a person is able to kill young children or kill anybody with hate in their heart. And you know, being down there yesterday with the vice president and being with talking with some of the families that lost people in Sutherland Springs, when you realize a community like Sutherland Springs has less than 700 people.
Isn't that crazy?
And everybody that lost a family member knew all the other people that were killed as well. So not only were they grieving for themselves and for their own family, they were grieving for their fellow neighbors. And you know, the one thing that warmed my heart through this process is I got to hear the stories of some really amazing people. Every family member, when they were talking about their deceased loved one, you know, said it was the best person that they knew. And while they were grieving and crying, a smile would come to their face, remembering that their loved one. And, you know, I'm lucky to have heard these stories. And, you know, I told the families that, you know, now we have to celebrate their lives for the rest of our lives. And, you know, I think so many more Americans and folks across the world have gotten the chance to see and to hear about these amazing people and see the resiliency of a community like Sutherland Springs.
It's Congressman Will Hurd. He, of course, a U.S. representative from our area here in Texas, a Republican. As you mentioned, Vice President Pence, Attorney General Sessions, the Governor Greg Abbott, the Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, Henry Cuellar, representative, of course, that's his district. You were there. You had all these dignitaries there and bleachers filled with people who were there just to, I guess, just to mourn together and just to talk together. As you started saying, you walked around and you met with people from the community. Did you talk specifically to family members? And did you get a chance to talk to the two men that ended up chasing this guy and I think mitigating what he was going to do next?
I did. I talked with family members. I talked with the two heroes, and you know, they're a little, maybe shy is the right word.
Yeah.
And uncomfortable with that label because they just reacted in the heat of the moment to protect their family members and to try to right a wrong. And it really was great seeing these two humble, you know, normal guys that truly prevented more carnage from happening. And
yeah.
They were warmly received last night by the crowd, and they're still dealing with the aftermath. And the one gentleman that was driving the car, you know, he was in town. He didn't live in Sutherland Springs.
They're from Seguin, which is not that close.
Yeah. And so he was in town. You know, he had just picked up a breakfast taco and a Big Red.
Yeah, right.
And was going to pick up his girlfriend, and he he sprung into action. And so it really is a great story of these two strangers that will forever be linked because of their feats of heroism.
As Congressman Will Hurd, last night was at the vigil, met with the families, met with people in the community. I just want to make one, and just as more of a statement, Will, and you could say something to it if you wanted. If not, don't worry about it. I've been in this area for 12 years now, and I've got a lot of fans in Sutherland Springs and in that area. I didn't go down. I didn't want to go down, and I'm not going to go down until things settle down a little bit, because I think it's inappropriate almost how much media is there. I've heard stories of media banging on car windows and knocking on every door in town and just not being as respectful as you might think, because after this big story is no longer their lead story, they're going to get back on planes, go back to L.A. or New York or Chicago or whatever. How is the community dealing with that? I've actually had people say to me, boy, they're not really being very respectful. Are you seeing any of that?
Yeah, a few of the family members said that, you know, they felt like they were being pestered by the press.
Yeah.
And they were having a difficult time, you know, grieving.
Well, like you said, there's 600 some odd people in town, and you probably have 100 or more members of the press, and maybe 200. So you're talking about a third as many as lived there are there now from out of town. And again, I used to be in that business. You come in, you get the story, and you don't really think much about what's going on around you. And I just feel for these people. And again, I'll go down there when things settle down, because I don't need to go down there and make a mockery out of myself. And I don't want to get in somebody's face who might have just lost a loved one. I just wondered if you saw any of that.
No, you did. But I would also say the fact that we've been able to hear the stories of the men and women that perished last Sunday. You know, that we've heard, you know, we've been able to see the resiliency of these communities and the Holcomb family who lost 8 people.
Such a tragedy.
And an unborn child. You know, we know those stories now. And I will add, I think the community and what they expressed to me yesterday was that they were overwhelmed with the amount of support and prayers and hugs that they've gotten from all over the country.
And by the way, I'm not commenting on the local media. I think the locals have all done great, and they're very respectful. They understand how we are here in this part of Texas. I mean more of the national media. We're almost out of time, so I got to make a hard turn here, if you don't mind. Is that okay?
Sure, of course.
I went to Washington last week. As you know, I had a one-on-one interview with President Trump. It was about tax reform and what he wants to do. And tax reform is the right thing to do. When Barack Obama had the House and the Senate, he was able to shove tax increases down our throats, and we couldn't do anything about it. Now the House and the Senate and the presidency are all Republican, and for some reason, the Senate seems to have a problem with getting on board with the president's agenda. Where are you, and what are you hearing in the House when it comes to saving us all some money in our tax burden?
Well, where we are in the House, our goal is to have a bill passed by Thanksgiving. We're still on track to do that.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that hardworking taxpayers keep more money in their pocket. And conservative.
It really is that simple, right?
And I don't mean conservative in a political leaning way. I mean in a, you know, being judicious in predictions.
Right.
A average family, you know, the average salary of a family in the United States is $59,000.
Right.
The average family is 4 people in that family. Based on our tax plan, our tax cuts, that family is going to have $1,182 money more in their pockets, because that's how much less they're going to send to Washington D.C. And for a family making $59,000, that's a pretty significant chunk.
No, $1,200 is a lot of money to anybody. I mean, without a doubt. Now, when I was there, they also said, and it could be about $4,000 more after we repatriate this money and corporations start using that money to hire and so on and so forth. That's a little bit of a reach, and maybe it'll get there. But the guarantee in the paperwork now is almost $1,200.
Absolutely. And because we're simplifying the code, I think a lot of folks don't understand the standard deduction and what that means and how doubling it is going to have a significant impact. So if you fill out the easy form now, you're not taking any deductions, and your standard deduction is $12,500. So you take that off of your adjusted gross income. Now we're doubling it to $24,500, doubling it. Most people, even when they itemize their expenses, I think the average is around $15,000.
Yeah.
So you're still being able to, you're paying less money on those early dollars. And so we simplify the code. which means you're going to be able to do your taxes, you know, that your listeners are going to be able to do their taxes on a postcard.
That's awesome.
And, you know, in a handful of minutes. You're going to not send as much money to Washington, D.C. And then, oh, yeah, the fact that you're going to include growth. One of the things that I think is funny is that my friends on the other side of the political aisle like to say that this is going to add $1.5 trillion to the debt. They're making assumptions based on no growth. We only saw growth in the 1.3, 1.5.
Right, it's over 3
area.
Now, and we haven't lowered taxes yet. It's over 3 already. So the economy, absolutely. I mean, it could be 4, 4.5, it could be 5. I'm not going to predict, I'm not a predictor, but I mean, you're looking at saving corporations money, saving people money in their paychecks. They're going to start spending money and investing money and utilizing that money, which will grow the economy. I got to run here. One quick last one. I got to be quick because I was told you got to go. So the Senate already is making grumblings and mumblings that it might not get on board with this until 2019 or something. Have you heard about this, and do you think that you'll get this bill convened where you guys can sit down in both the Senate and the House and figure it out?
My understanding of that is that some of the effects of their version of the tax bill will not take effect until late 2018, early 2019. The goal is still to get something passed to the president's desk as soon as possible by the end of this year.
He wants to sign it by Christmas. Going to happen?
I hope so.
All right, listen, next time you're in town, let's get together. Let's do this in studio, and we'll let people see you as well. I appreciate your time, Will, and I'm really glad that you were down there at Sutherland Springs last night. You've always been a calming voice for me. We don't agree on everything, but you're a calming voice, and you're a calm guy, and I think that probably helped an awful lot.
Well, I appreciate that, Joe. It's always good talking to you.
All right, we appreciate you. We're back after this on the Joe Pags Show. Stay right here.
This is the Joe Pags Show.
News Radio 1200, WOAI.
Hi, great to have you. Welcome to the program. Thanks. It's the Joe Pags Show. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. There's an accusation toward Judge Roy Moore in Alabama. And the accusation is from 32 years ago. Or was it 38 years ago when he was 32?
Yeah, Carrie, do we know when this was? It was almost 40, so I think you're 38.
All right.
Probably. Correct.
So he's 70 now, so he would have been 32 at the time. The allegation is that he had some inappropriate sexual relationship with a 14-year-old at the time. And now there are two or three other then teenagers who are saying the same thing happened when they're in their early 30s. We'll give you the entire story. I'll give you my thoughts on it. I was actually, it's interesting because I was talking to one of our great radio stations today in Alabama, and I don't think he wants me to say his name now with all this coming out, but either way, we were working on getting Judge Moore on, and I hope to still get him on. It would be good to have him on. I've been a fan of what he's done politically for a long time. He was the guy that stood up at the Supreme Court in Alabama and said the Ten Commandments should be allowed to be out here. He beat Luther Strange in the primary, or the Republican primary, and he's now running for U.S. Senator out of Alabama. And again, his bona fides, or bona fides, depends on how you say it, when it comes to politics, it makes sense. When it comes to conservative values, it makes sense. When it comes to Judeo-Christian values, it makes sense. Now there are allegations that he did something that would, if true, would be horrible. So we'll talk about that. We'll break it down. Carrie will have the whole story after the top of the hour. Bottom of the next hour will be Stephen Mansfield. He's an author, New York Times bestselling author. Choosing Donald Trump is the name of the book. And it's about the evangelicals coming out for Donald Trump. And a year later, 1 year to the day yesterday since his election, are the evangelicals, the Christian right, are they happy with what the president's done so far? Interesting conversation. Make sure you stick around for that. I hadn't talked to him before, but really got a great education out of it, and I think that you will as well. We've got that for you, plus Louis C.K. Now, Carrie, is just everybody going to be accused of doing something abhorrent sexually?
I'm guessing at least every day, at least one or two.
Isn't he the guy that went on Saturday Night Live and was just raucous and crazy and saying all sorts of weird negative things? And now the allegations are that he's been doing crude sexual things for at least 5 years.
Yes.
At his TV shows and wherever else. So we'll talk about that, too. It just seems that if you watch the Twitters, and I know you do, if you watch the Twitter, and like I do, you got 280 characters, by the way. I'm just lighting it up, man.
Oh, I bet you are.
I still have yet to get to any post that I'm making where I don't have enough space.
Wow.
I mean, I have not, like, it hasn't been like, you know, delete something. I have not gone over, so I don't think I need more than 280, to be honest with you. Emmett, I've got to only about 45 seconds. I don't leave you hanging through the break. What's on your mind? Come on.
Hey, Joe, how you doing, man?
Living the dream. Don't have much time. Make it happen.
Yeah, hey, Joe, I just wanted to give a shout-out to the people of Texas, man. They, you know, my heart goes out to them. My thoughts are in there and my prayers, too. And I'm just a little curious, and it's kind of puzzling. I watch the news and stuff on Newsmax, OAN, and Fox, and when they were showing the FBI agent on there talking about breaking the phone, and then this Secretary of the Air Force got on there, they kind of sort of had a little nonchalant demeanor, and I was just curious about that.
Well, it was strange, and Emmett, I appreciate you're almost out of time. The whole phone thing was, it was an iPhone, and I guess they could have used the dead guy's finger, his thumb, to unlock it, but after 48 hours, you have to actually put the passcode in, and they didn't ask for help before the 48 hours expired. That was all very weird. Quick break, back after this.
You're listening to Joe Pags.
Now, live from the WOAI studios in San Antonio, it's the Joe Pags Show.
Is the Joe Pags Show. To talk to Joe, call 800-383-9624 or go to joepags.com. And now, it's Joe Pags.
Yes, indeed. Great radio stations across the land. iHeartRadio, joepags.com. It is the Joe Pags Show. Also, of course, on Newsmax TV. Glad to have you along for the ride on a Thursday. I'm feeling all right. Yes, I am. Say what? Carrie, you feeling all right?
I am.
Seems I got to have.
Wow. You actually in a good mood today or what?
Aren't I always in a good mood?
Nah. So is that a Letterman sweater? What is that?
No, it's not a Letterman sweater.
I'm just asking you if it's a Letterman sweater.
No. Leave me alone.
Like there could be a big L or something on there. I don't know.
I was in a good mood.
What? I'm actually giving you credit for getting a Letterman's jacket or sweater. It's a big deal.
No. It is not a Letterman sweater. No, not
Turn
really.
Turn it up. Sing along. Let's go.
Took the key. Feeling all right.
That's right.
I'm not feeling too good myself.
You know, the harmony's better today. I don't know why.
Yes, sir. Feeling all right.
Yep.
I'm not feeling too good myself.
Now, if you stick around for hour number three, you get Grand Funk Railroad's version of Feeling All Right, which I think is awesome.
Yes.
Pleasure to have you here. There's a lot to get to, lots that we'll talk about. In this hour, you'll hear Trump tweets. People look forward to the Trump tweets. Somebody actually tweeted what they thought I said in Trump tweets, and it was just a bunch of random letters and then Trump tweets at the end. So that was kind of cool. We'll do that. We'll talk about President Trump's trip to Asia. And I'll head it off by saying this. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. If you're a truth teller, if you're gonna not be a liar, then you have to admit Trump is kicking ass in Asia. Just is. I mean, he's doing great there. Just like he did great in the Middle East earlier on his trip. Not this trip, a different trip. Just, you know, when he gets back home, he's got a media that just wants to give him a hard time. Now, Carrie, did you see the one reporter, I forget where she's a reporter from, and not really a reporter, who stood up to ask him about gun control in South Korea?
Yes, I did. Yep, saw that.
And she compared it to extreme vetting for people coming from predominantly Muslim countries. And they're not really even predominantly Muslim countries, although that's true. They're really countries where there's a predominance of radical Islamic terrorists. And that radicalization is happening in these countries. And we have a hard time figuring out how to vet the people from there. So it's not really even about their religion. It's about the contact with terrorism and terrorist groups in these countries, which makes our vetting system hard to do. But she says, so you're for extreme vetting for people from predominantly Muslim countries. And I'm saying it in context, although this is a paraphrase. So are you now for extreme vetting for guns? He's like, what? And his answer is actually pretty great. His answer was, if we did what you're suggesting, then the good guy couldn't have grabbed his rifle and shot the bad guy twice. And then she does a follow-up and says, so are you going to be doing some moves on gun control? And it's, what? Yeah. And like he even says to her, well, we're here in South Korea. You know, we're visiting with the South Korean president. But I'll answer your question. And I went on her Twitter. I forget her name even. I ran her Twitter page. I said, did you not feel dumb enough after the first part of the question? How do you double down and go back and really prove that you're not very smart? I just don't understand. So that's what we're dealing with. And when he gets back here, there's going to be an onslaught of this crap, too. We'll talk about Judge Roy Moore in a second. But I do want to relate I think that enough people are on social media that I think that they actually like the social media stories. Because I think that, Carrie, I think that it actually reflects what they're facing every day as well.
Probably so.
There's a guy on my Facebook page. And by the way, bottom of this hour will be Stephen Mansfield. He wrote a book called Choosing Donald Trump about the evangelical vote. And has Donald Trump held up his part of the bargain? We'll talk about that bottom of the hour. Make sure you stick around. But I've got a guy, I got to be honest, I don't know if he still works at the station.
Mm-hmm.
Is that bad? Should
yes,
I know?
Yes, you should know. You should know.
I know he used to. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he does anymore. He might.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter. I'm not going to call him out by name. But he's got a page, and he's a lefty, leans left. I don't care. It really doesn't bother me. We can be friends and you lean left. We can be relatives and you can lean left. It really doesn't matter to me. What matters is when you start acting foolish and posting foolish things. So he shares some video of some business owner who's very wealthy on with Stuart Varney on Fox Business or whatever. And the guy goes on and on and on about how horrible this tax reform bill would be, how horrible the tax cuts would be, and it's just a big, you know, free money grab for rich people, and it hurts the middle class and the poor. And before Stuart Varney can say his bit, they cut the video off. And it says, patriotic American puts Fox News host in its place or some crap. So my comment was, I really wish that we could see the entire video, because I'm sure Stuart Varney didn't just sit there and say, okay, you're right, have a nice day. And a lot of what this guy said was wrong. Well, because of that, you've got idiots just launching this is a tax cut for the rich, and it's taking money from the poor and giving it to the rich. Gary, we've talked about this at length, to the point to where other talk show hosts, I believe, have stolen it from me, mm-hmm. and they're doing it now, too. What exactly is it that the poor have, or has, it's have, that we can take from them, or the government can take from them, and give to the rich people?
Well, nothing.
Their food stamps? Their SNAP card? Their welfare? What is it that we're taking from the poor and giving to the rich? Oh. I mean, if you're saying that the tax plan somehow takes from the rich and gives to the rich, making rich people even richer and taking some money from other rich people who are already richy rich, I'm listening to you. But if you're saying that they're taking money from the poor and giving it to the rich, what? Tell me where they're getting the money. I just want to know. Carrie, do poor people have stacks of money in their bedrooms that we don't know about?
I'm going to say no.
We are here for the government to take your secret stash. I mean, is that what it is?
I don't think so, no.
Come on, dude. So when somebody argues that, I just give them the fact. That's not true. The poor people will go to 0%. The middle class goes from whatever they are now down to 12, possibly, the lower middle class. And then there's another, maybe 20 or 25% or 80%, whatever the hell it is. And then the rich people who are making over a certain amount of money, they're not getting a tax cut at all. It stays at 39.6. Which I'm not happy about, because I think everybody in America should get a tax cut. Already, the top 1% pays over 40% of the taxes. The top 10% pays over 70% of all taxes. That somehow still isn't enough. And the response is, yeah, it's just about as rich buddies taking from the poor and giving to the rich, and the poor people are suffering. And there's no truth to it. Not an iota of truth. Not even a little bit. So I try to, and again, I've got to stop engaging. So I try to engage and say, listen, just educate yourself. No reason to get all stupid about it. Just, and I'm not talking to the person who either does or doesn't work with us anymore. These are other people on his page who are responding. And they're just these naysayer idiots. And I had to unfollow this guy. Now, we're still friends on Facebook, but I had to unfollow him. If you unfollow, you don't see the notifications. Mm-hmm. You don't see when, like, for some reason, he and I have interacted enough to where he shows up kind of first in my news feed. And I don't want that, because it's always this left-wing crap, and it's always completely and absolutely out of context, and it's always wrong. And it just, it makes my fingers hurt to try to type, you know, what the hell are you people doing? So, I mean, have you run into that? Where, but you don't really engage enough on Facebook, do you?
I do not, no. I don't want to. I don't do that kind of stuff. No. I either just ignore it or I block them. And I've done that a couple of times.
In this case, and only this one time, you're smarter than I am when it comes to that. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. When we come back, we'll do some Trump tweets. We will have the story of Judge Roy Moore in Alabama. And I'll give you my comments on it. I don't know the truth. Carrie, does anybody know the truth except for Judge Moore and the people that are accusing him?
That would be the only people that would know.
So I don't know the truth. But I do know the timing, and I do know the source, and it's all very suspect to me. So we'll talk about that, too. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. Keep it right here.
Joe Pag.
WOAI is an iHeart radio station.
Hey, great to have you. Welcome to the program. Thanks. The Joe Pag Show. 1-800-383-9624. JoePags.com. Always a pleasure to have you along for the ride. There's a lot going on today. We'll get into the story about Judge Roy Moore. He's being accused of inappropriate, they're saying a sexual relationship with a 14-year-old, right?
Well, a sexual encounter. I don't know if it was a relationship.
Sexual encounter.
Yeah,
okay.
On a couple of occasions.
We'll have that for you. We'll certainly have that for you. I just want to make sure. I think there are only two Trump tweets today. Is that possible, really, from
only
our president?
Only two?
Wow. All right. Well, we can probably knock those right out then if there are only two. Trump tweets. I can't believe there's only two Trump tweets. Okay. Is it going a little overboard now?
Just a tad.
Is it a little over the top?
It's a lot over the top sometimes.
Tell you what, if you love the Trump tweets and how I intro them, Twitter.com/Joe Talk Show or at Joe Talk Show on Twitter. The first rule is, and I'm pretty sure this is a rule. I checked it with the rule committee, and you have to follow me on the Twitter. So at Joe Talk
That's
Show.
Not a rule.
At totally a rule.
No.
Rule, not a rule.
So.
That's going to be a rule.
Not a rule.
At Joe Talk Show. And if you like the intro to the Trump tweets, let me know. One, if you don't like it, you could tweet to Kerry. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. Our president today at 2.08 a.m. this morning, which would have been like 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something there or some crap. President Xi, thank you so much for an incredible welcome ceremony. It was truly a memorable and impressive display. And then he puts a picture of a camera. I guess because
right?
On the new Twitters you can put the little icons, little avatars and stuff. I guess that's what he's doing.
Okay.
And at 8:58 this morning, he said, "In the coming months and years ahead, I look forward to building an even stronger relationship between the United States and China," or as he would say, China. And then he puts a little American flag, a little Chinese flag on there. So now the president's having fun with icons.
Yes, he is.
And emojis. Are those emojis? Or are they icons? Or are they avatars?
I don't know. Let's say icons.
Okay. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. Appreciate you stopping by. I've got people calling in about taxes. And I don't want to not do the Roy Moore story in this hour, because we'll lose Newsmax next hour. So why don't we go ahead and do the Roy Moore story? Bottom of the hour will be Stephen Mansfield. He's an author who wrote a book about evangelicals and the president. It's called Choosing Donald Trump. And I wondered right off the top, why? Why did they choose Donald Trump, whereas they really didn't choose John McCain and Mitt Romney? So we'll talk about that. But if you can, give us the story about Judge Roy Moore that broke today.
From Fox News, Alabama Republican Senate candidate Roy Moore on Thursday adamantly denied a Washington Post report on a woman who claims the former judge and staunch social conservative initiated a sexual encounter with her when she was 14, allegations that have rocked the race in the final stretch. And the Post story centered on allegations made by Lee Korfman, now 53. She told the newspaper that Moore, then an assistant district attorney, first approached her in 1979 outside a courtroom in Alabama where she was sitting with her mother. On another occasion, she said Moore, then 32, took her to his home in the woods and kissed her. And during a subsequent visit, Korfman reportedly claimed he took off her shirt and pants, touched her over her bra and her underwear, and guided her hand to his underwear. And she said the two did not have sexual intercourse and that she ended up getting dressed and asking Moore to take her home, according to the Post. "I wanted it over with. I wanted out," she told the Post, apparently recalling her train of thought at the time. Moore did take her home, she said. The report caused immediate problems for Moore with his own party as he heads into the December 12th election against Democrat Doug Jones. Several GOP senators called on him to step aside if the allegations are true, and at least one senator, Arizona's John McCain, said he should drop out regardless. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who backed Moore's rival Luther Strange in the GOP primary, said in a statement, "If these allegations are true, he must step aside."
I want to make sure I understand. John McCain said drop out regardless.
That is what he said, yes.
What? So if somebody made up an allegation about Roy Moore, and I'm not saying that she did, I don't know what happened, neither do you, neither does anybody listening or watching. But if somebody makes something up about somebody that something was made up about should drop out of the race. So if she's lying, and I don't know if she is or not, he should drop out of the race because John McCain says so. Does that make sense to you? Somebody makes a false allegation, and you should just have a nice day. Because Roy Moore has said this did not happen; it's a lie.
Right? He said it's absolutely false. And Democrat operatives and baseless. Yeah, and it's a desperate political attack. He has said that today.
So, Judge Roy Moore is not just brand new to the spotlight. Carrie, you have any idea how long ago that the whole statue or the big giant plaque with the Ten Commandments on it outside the court. Do you remember when that was? Was it 10 years ago? It feels like 10 years ago.
I didn't think it was that long ago, but I'll double check.
The whole controversy about the atheists wanted it removed, and he fought and fought and fought to keep it there. I think that at the end of the day, they ended up taking it down, which made me sick, because our laws are based on the Magna Carta, the Ten Commandments, and other things. There's nothing whatsoever offensive about the Ten Commandments. In fact, the tablets of the Ten Commandments are on the outside of the Supreme Court building, as are other things. So that whole thing didn't make any sense. So with that going on, could you do me a favor and see if you could find out when that was?
I'm looking right now.
Feels like 10 years ago to me.
Okay.
Yeah. Feels like it might even be more than 10 years ago, to be honest with you. Why didn't she come out then? He was like a Supreme Court judge, I believe, in Alabama. And again, willing to be wrong about that. I'm not in Alabama, but I'm just remembering it from when we reported on it. Got all sorts of spotlight. People were interviewing left and right. He was out there trying to stop the protesters. I mean, this guy has been making a noise, a positive noise for conservatism and for Christian values for a long time. Why doesn't she come out then? I mean, I don't want to suggest that people don't report crimes. Report them. I don't want to suggest that people, sit back and stay quiet about sexual assault. Don't. I want you to report it. But you wait 38 years, and now you're coming out? The guy's 70. You're alleging he did it when he was 32, and you were 14. Why now? You know what I mean? Carrie, he just won the primary against Luther Strange. Why now?
I don't know. I don't know. Why wait 40 years?
I just don't understand it. And listen, I'll be as clear as I can. I've got five daughters. If this guy did this at 32 years old, was kissing a girl who's 14, taking her shirt off and her pants off and touching her in places, making her touch him, the guy's a piece of garbage. If that happened, was open to talk about sexual assault, that was a big thing in the late 1990s. She could have come out then, when she would have still been an adult for a long time.
And him and the Ten Commandments.
And he would have been 50 years old.
That happened in 2003.
Okay, so yeah, it's more than 10 years ago. You're looking at 14 years ago, this guy. So 14 years ago, she's 52 now. She's in her late 30s. And it will have been 20 some odd years since it happened. So what are we talking about here? Why is it coming out now? And are we in a place to where we just take the word of somebody 40 years later, well, it happened and I just couldn't find the strength till I was 52? Really? So I'm not here to say that she's lying. I am here to say, because that story also cites like three other women, right?
Yes.
And he didn't. There are no allegations of sexual anything. They're just trying to say that he was catting around trying to pick up young girls. The only sexual, assault that's being alleged is from this woman. Why now? Why the Washington Post, far left-leaning newspaper? And look, don't get me wrong. If it's true, he's a piece of garbage and should be thrust from the ticket. But this is way, way, way too coincidental with the timing of it all, when this could have come out any number of times in the past four decades. All right, 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. If you're calling in about Roy Moore, you're going to be holding on for a while. I've got my interview with Stephen Mansfield coming out called Choosing Donald Trump. That's his book. I want you to go and get it. That's when we come back.
Joe Pando.
Donald Trump being very complimentary to the Chinese, and the left is going crazy. What do you think? Let's talk about it. Coming up at 8 on the Michael Berry Show.
radio stations across the land, iHeartRadio, JoePags.com, also Newsmax TV. It's the Joe Pags Show. Really glad to have you here today, and really glad to have New York Times bestselling author, it's Stephen Mansfield. He's written a book called Choosing Donald Trump, and it's a really interesting angle to the current presidency. Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah, really glad to have you on, man. This is an interesting book to me because if I go back in history, and please correct me if I get anything wrong, in 2008, John McCain didn't get the evangelicals. I mean, if you counted who got more, he would have gotten more, but they generally sat on their hands. And the Christian right in 2012 from Mitt Romney sort of did the same thing. Could be for different reasons for those two candidates. Maybe they just weren't very good. Romney's religion might have played a role.
Yes.
This time around, Donald Trump got evangelicals to get up and go to the polls, which really surprised a ton of people on the left. A, why did that happen? How did he make that happen?
Well, I think it had to do with the times, for one thing. Religious conservatives in America were really traumatized by the Obama years and terrified of the prospect of Hillary Clinton. And Donald Trump, though not a deeply religious man throughout much of his life, his own admission, he had got engaged in listening sessions with prominent clergy around the country, scheduled by Paula White, and he really understood the plight, the concerns, the fears, the anger of religious conservatives. He reflected it. So I think it had to do with the times, again, the two people who people were afraid of.
Yeah.
I think it had to do with his mastery of the concerns of the people on the right. And I think the fact is that by the time we got to the general election, Donald Trump did not get most of the evangelical vote during the primaries.
Yeah.
But by the time we got to the general election, it was obvious he was the only guy who could win. And that's why religious conservatives went for him.
It's Stephen Mansfield, Stephen with a PH. Make sure you go and get his book. It's called Choosing Donald Trump. It's interesting because it's almost as if Trump watched what happened, or his campaign staff watched what happened in 08 and 012 and said, if we don't go and visit, if we don't go and meet with them, if we don't go and really listen, we have no chance of getting them. So is it a matter of McCain and Romney took them for granted and it didn't come through, and then Trump said we can't repeat that?
Well, I think that evangelicals and religious conservatives in America are a pretty forgiving bunch. But John McCain never really appealed to them very much. He was kind of suspicious of them. He'd been hurt earlier by some preachers and some tensions he'd had with Jerry Falwell.
Right.
So he was suspicious of them. And then as good a man as Mitt Romney might have been, he was a Mormon. And surveys just simply showed that the religious base of the Republican Party were slow to warm to him. So Donald Trump comes along. Yeah, he's not a deeply religious man, but he is reflecting their concerns. He's talking about even, making sure we can say Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
And talking about the Johnson Amendment. I'm not sure most of the other candidates even knew what that was.
Right.
And so he wins them. And I think it was to the extent, it was authentic in the sense that he was legitimately concerned about their concerns, even if these weren't lifelong concerns for him.
Hey, Stephen, how big a voting block is this?
Oh, it's pretty huge. You're talking about 81% of white evangelicals that Donald Trump polled. You're talking about half of all Roman Catholics and half of all regular church attenders in America. It was a huge block.
All right, so it was very smart for him to go after them. Let me ask you this. Again, it's Stephen Mansfield. The name of the book is Choosing Donald Trump, and we'll talk about how he's done a year later and how evangelicals feel today compared to how they felt when they voted for him. How about when that Access Hollywood tape comes out? I mean, showing clearly his locker room talk, and he's having a conversation with Billy Bush, and he's talking in very lascivious, and sordid manner about women and what you can do if you're a rich guy. Did that set them back? Did they think twice about voting for him and maybe sitting on their hands again?
I think many evangelicals did have to really think twice about pulling for Donald Trump. But two things. First of all, they're a forgiving bunch.
Yeah.
And I think one of the virtues of Donald Trump is that he has never claimed to be a quote-unquote holy roller. He's never claimed to be a strong Christian. He's never claimed to be a highly moral man. He knows that he even defended infidelity at one point in his life, and it was in the headlines of New York. So I think that was a virtue. And I will say that some evangelicals really found themselves in the squeeze because of that video. And so when some prominent evangelicals came out and said, well, boys will be boys, I mean, this did cause some tensions in the evangelical community. But still, what was the alternative? The alternative was Hillary Clinton, and that was just too frightening for a lot of religious conservatives to go with. So it ended up, as we all know now, not hurting him very much. And I'd have to say I'm surprised by that even to this day.
It's interesting because you're right. Donald Trump, when he first said he was going to run, the left immediately said, yeah, but he's been married all these times and look at all these affairs and look, he's chasing skirts his whole life. And he came on camera or went on the radio and he said, yeah. I mean, it's all out there. I mean, he wasn't going to pretend. He wasn't going to be like Bill Clinton and say, I didn't have sexual relations with that woman. He was going to say, I did. You guys know I did. And that's in the past. I'm happily married now for 11 years. And I've got a son and I'm running for president. Why is that a thing? I mean, it wasn't a thing for all these years. For 45 years, I've been in the public spotlight. Why is it a thing now? I mean, did that really serve to quell all of that garbage?
Well, I think it is. I think that authentic approach from him, where he's not claiming to be more than he is. You know, the left has a certain level of hypocrisy about moral issues.
Yeah.
On the one hand, urging for the most part what evangelicals and religious conservatives would consider an immoral approach to many issues.
Right.
And then suddenly let a man like Donald Trump step to the fore, and suddenly the left is concerned about divorce, concerned about, you know, remarriage,
right,
concerned about all these things they never talk about otherwise.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And so Donald, you know, I have a chapter in the book where I say, you know, one of the appeals of Donald Trump to the average American is that they hear themselves in him. In private, they may speak in racially questionable terms. They right. have anger. They cuss. They are divorced or have loved ones who are. So Donald Trump feels to them authentic, and that's one of his virtues, whatever else may be wrong with him in the eyes of some voters.
His name is Stephen Mansfield. I want you to go and get his book. It's called Choosing Donald Trump. So let's fast forward a year. We just had the anniversary of the historic upset. Donald Trump electorally slaughtered Hillary Clinton in the polls. He won 30 states. She won 20. It was 305 to something small in the 200s. And the evangelicals had a lot that they expected from him. They expected he would be a man of his word. Has he been?
I think according to the things evangelicals were concerned about and hoped for, he has been true to his word. The main issue, of course, putting Gorsuch on the Supreme Court,
yeah.
Holding at least talking a line, if not being able to actually execute a clear line with radical Islam, many other issues like that, doing what he can do about the Johnson Amendment. He can't just outright abolish it.
Yeah.
He has to urge a culture in D.C. against it. And so I think while there's been maybe a 5% loss of support in the evangelical community, according to some polls, for Donald Trump, that has more to do with NFL players and calling them SOBs,
yeah, right,
and things like that. But for the most part, he's fulfilling the promises that evangelicals and religious conservatives held dear.
Well, he did the Mexico City thing right off the bat, but I think every
yes.
Republican, every Democrat changes that right off the bat.
Exactly.
He also, he made a big, big issue out of religious liberty, made announcements, proclamations. We will have religious liberty. We will protect people's right to worship as they see fit and not force people in corporations that are Christian or Judeo-Christian based to pay for contraception. And,
exactly.
And right now we're talking about the debate about baking cakes for gay weddings again. I'm guessing that this voting bloc likes all that.
They do like it. And I'll tell you the thing they see the most is that religious leaders have access in this White House. I mean, during the Obama years, Mr. Obama had many religious leaders in there,
yeah,
but evangelicals and religious conservatives weren't primary, weren't preferred.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump is actually giving these people access. He's hearing their advice, and that word gets out to the religious conservatives in America, and they applaud that. So it's a good thing overall.
So going forward, what does he owe them? And by the way, it's Choosing Donald Trump. Choosing Donald Trump is the name of the book. Buy a copy, buy two or three, give it to your family and friends. New York Times bestselling author Stephen Mansfield is the guy. What do they still expect? He's got at least three more years, if not seven. What do they want him to do that he hasn't done yet, but they feel good that he's on the way?
I think they'd like to see support for a ban on federal funding of abortions.
Yeah.
I think they'd like to see a strong stand against federal funding of Planned Parenthood. I think they'd like to hear strong support for further religious liberty, a rollback of some of these restrictions on religious liberty.
Yeah.
And I think they'd like to see some guarantee that we won't see lawsuits from the Justice Department against organizations like the Green Family, owners of Hobby Lobby, you know, yeah, that there'll be some protection. So mainly I think they're looking for a combination of a culture and then specific actions along those lines. But if they continue to give the religious voices access, I think most evangelicals will be happy.
I think the left in this country, I know the left in this country wants us all to believe, Stephen, that people aren't religious anymore, that religion doesn't mean much, that saying that we're a Judeo-Christian society is a fallacy. We're actually a society of a bunch of people who kind of believe and kind of don't believe. I think you and I both know that that's BS. Do you happen to know, and you might not, and I'm sorry for springing it on you, but do you happen to know the percentages of people that still firmly believe in a Judeo-Christian value system? I've heard numbers in the 70s to 80s as far as percent. Listen to the media, you'd think it's 5%. Do you have any clue?
Yeah. Surveys show that, first of all, 91% of Americans believe in God.
Yeah.
And then if you're talking about Judeo-Christian values broadly, you are in the 70% range. And if you're talking about people who would identify as religious conservatives, you're slightly above 50%. So there's no question by any standard we're talking about a religious country.
These are huge numbers. So the indoctrination,
yes,
from academia, from Hollywood, and from the media, basically saying, we just want a free-for-all, nobody can tell me what to believe, and we're not really a Bible-thumping country anymore. That's really not true, is it?
No, it's not true. And by the way, if you're starting to talk about the Bible, the number of people who believe the Bible at least contains the Word of God, and if it's not exactly verbally the Word of God, is somewhere in the 60 to 70% range as well, higher than any other country in the world.
Isn't that stunning? All right, so the last question, I really appreciate the time. It's Choosing Donald Trump, New York Times bestselling author Stephen Mansfield. You got to go and get this. It's a great read. Last question. Heading into the next election, already you see the onslaught from the left. Do you think that the voting bloc that is the evangelical right, whatever we're calling them, the evangelicals, is that gut block, is it really only 5% eroded? And do you believe that number to even be true? If it were 4 years from now, if it were 2020, does he still have their support?
He has their support unless there's a major betrayal. I think the hardcore, I'm from the South, so I call it the hardcore Bubba vote, is absolutely in favor of him. But we did see some disturbing trends in Virginia. I'm sitting in Virginia right now as we speak, in that gubernatorial race where, you know, about 70% of the young vote went for the opponent, Democratic candidate. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some dicey numbers happening here. There's definitely a shift happening. But I think if Donald Trump maintains true to the values that he's been holding forth, continues to give evangelicals access, I think he'll continue to hold that Bubba vote, as I call it.
I want to sort of make a part B on that question, if I can.
Sure.
Because you brought up Virginia. Gillespie wasn't supposed to win anyway. That was already a blue-collar state, although you do see demographic shifts in the state, much of it because of employees of the federal government that live in the state now. Do you think that any evangelicals sat on their hands because it was Gillespie? And had Gillespie actually asked him to come and campaign for him? He had Bush 43 campaign for him, Bush 43, who at the same time was complaining about Donald Trump. So had he had Trump come in, and he would have. Do you think that would have helped?
I think it would have helped. And the problem was that he was unclear. For those of us sitting in Virginia, he, on the one hand, spent almost $500,000 on mailers talking about Trump's support. But then at the same time, he tried to run away from Trump. So it was a bit confusing.
Yeah.
I think the main trend, the main statistic I know that's going to be a determinative, is that young voters, the socially conscious millennials, are suspicious of Donald Trump, haven't been won by, at least in this GOP race, weren't won. And they could really determine things as more of them come online as voters in the coming years. So there's going to have to be some appeal to them in order for us to stay solid the next election.
I think that's very, very intelligent. All right, it's Stephen Mansfield. Go and get his book, Choosing Donald Trump. Stephen, let's talk again.
I'd love it. Thanks, Joe.
I appreciate the time. Back after this is the Joe Pag Show. Stay right here.
Don't be an A-dub. Stay with the Joe Pag Show.
Updating you with the news that matters, coming up at the top of the hour on News Radio 1200 WOAI.
Yeah, glad to have you. Welcome. It is the Joe Pags Show, 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. Thanks a lot for stopping by. Lots going on, lots to get to, and we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I wanted the Johnson Amendment. You know what that is?
No. What is that?
Stephen Mansfield talked about it a lot. Johnson Amendment is named after Lyndon Johnson when he was a senator. It was his amendment. And the Johnson Amendment is... Oh, I couldn't... I'm going to have to look at this one. I have to look at this one over here, Carrie. Mm-hmm. The Johnson Amendment, written by NPR, because the president of the United States, Donald Trump, said he was going to work, you know, to get rid of the Johnson Amendment. According to NPR, the Johnson Amendment regulates what tax-exempt organizations such as churches can do in the political arena. In 1954, the legislation named for the principal sponsor, then Senator Lyndon Johnson, churches and other nonprofit organizations that are exempt from taxation are absolutely prohibited from directly or indirectly participating in or intervening in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for elected public office. All right. So let's break that down. What does that mean? That means if you go to church on Sunday, the priest, pastor, imam, rabbi, they can say, these are the principles of our church. This is what we stand for. This is our value system. When you go and vote, keep that in mind. Carrie, they can say that.
Mm-hmm.
That's allowed.
Got it.
What they can't do is, and because of that, vote for Donald Trump. They can't tell you to go and vote for the specific person. Now, there was widespread word that in the 2008 and 2012 elections that a lot of churches were saying, you better vote for Barack Obama. And they're actually saying Barack Obama. And I don't know of any cases, although there may be some, where a church has been penalized or fined because they push for one candidate over the other. Donald Trump and evangelicals, especially white Protestant evangelicals, according to this story from NPR, want this rule gone. Why should I lose my tax-exempt status if I use my First Amendment right to say, hey, we believe in this candidate because that candidate believes in our ways? I think it's kind of dumb. I understand why the legislation is there. I'll give you a scenario that's a hypothetical that I don't know has ever happened, but I'll give you a scenario. I'm running for office. You're the pastor at a church, right?
Mm-hmm.
I say, hey, Pastor Kerry, I give you $25,000 toward building a new wing for children in your church. You're on my side in the campaign coming up, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And then you hit the altar on Sunday, say, well, you got to vote for that Joe Pags. That was the fear, that there would be some sort of money exchanging hands and influence unduly put on the pastor. So I get it. But if you're a Christian church, or a Jewish church, some sort of devout religious person or place of worship, you're going to talk about your value system, and there's going to be one candidate that's closer to your value system than the other, and not being able to say the candidate's name, I think it's kind of dumb. I think it's, frankly, anti-American, to be honest with you. I just think it is. I don't think that it's what the Constitution protects. The Constitution says you have the freedom to speak, freedom to protest, freedom of worship, and the government can't restrict that. Well, the government is restricting it, although an argument could be made, well, you can do it, but you'll lose your tax-exempt status. Well, why should you lose your tax-exempt status? If churches and places of worship are going to be tax-exempt, let them be tax-exempt, and damn it, if the pastor wants to say vote for Barack Obama or vote for Donald Trump, they should be able to. It seems, you know, China-ish and Cuba-ish and North Korea-ish. It just seems wrong to me. So Trump wants to do away with that. He said that at the prayer breakfast. The evangelicals want him to do away with that. I don't know that it's going to happen. You've got a lot of people on both sides of the aisle, even on the Republican side, who are trying to stop his agenda and what he's trying to do. I guess this way in 2018 and 2020, they can say, look, he's achieved nothing. How horrible is zealous? Can somebody even achieve something? All the time, he didn't achieve anything because of them. Next hour, there is one state in the union that's pushing to roll the drinking age back to 19. Did you hear this?
I heard about it earlier today, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Yep. They're thinking about rolling it back to 19. Which state is it? Why do they want to do that? And what do you think about it when we come back? Got to go on TV. We're back on radio. Keep it here.
This is the Joe Pags Show.
Do it for life.
Now, live from the WOAI studios in San Antonio, it's the Joe Pags Show.
This is the Joe Pags Show. To talk to Joe, call 800-383-9624 or go to joepags.com. And now, it's Joe Pags.
Hey, great radio stations across the land. iHeartRadio, JoePags.com. It is the Joe Pags Show. Glad to have you along for the ride on a Thursday. I'm feeling all right. You know what I'm saying? I think you do. GFR.
Seems I got to have a change in scene.
Grand Funk Railroad, for those who don't know.
Every night I have the strange.
You ought to know. Flint, Michigan.
I got to leave before I start to scream. Somebody locked the door and took the key. Feeling alright. I'm feeling too good myself.
Mark, Don, and Mel, you know what I'm saying, Kurt?
I do.
Philo, Michigan. Grand Blanc.
Or Mel, Mark, and Don, is how I like to say it.
It's a...
It sounds better to me that way.
Nobody would ever say Mel's name first.
Okay.
Mel's the bass player. He's sort of the third wheel.
Okay.
Mark and Don were the guys. Mel's the guy, don't get me wrong, but... There you go. You know what a good move? I think we should get that other Thursday song. What do you think? A little of that.
Oh, yeah.
A little saxophone from your host. Your humble host. Extremely humble.
Well, it's a Thursday.
Uh-huh.
The Joe Pags Show.
Let's go.
Well, it's my favorite day.
Sing it, Marky Mark.
One more to go.
Wait, you better be a little saxophone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. What?
Who's that?
Oh, he's so silly.
Joe Pags Show.
Exactly right.
Oh, but Carrie and Karina drank all my wine. Joe said they drink a lot.
So much.
How they get through this show.
What to do with my beer?
Wow.
I left the six-pack sitting right here in the top.
tacos make you thirsty.
Let's go.
Taco on a Thursday on the Joe Pags Show. On a Thursday, I'll take us home now, Joe.
Okay. We have to do the at the end. All right, glad to have you here on a Thursday. There's a lot going on, lots to get to. We've got a few people holding on to talk about tax exempt status and taxes and churches and all that. I had a guy tweet me during the break. Are you okay with the Pope of the Catholic Church playing politics in the United States? It's from Kenneth over on the Twitter. Yes, Kenneth, I'm clearly okay because it's happened nonstop. It's what the man has done since he got the job. The pontiff has been much more liberal, much more about gay rights for some reason at a Catholic church, the leader of the Catholic Church. He's somebody who has talked about bridges and not walls when it comes to Donald Trump. I don't know that he specifically said, though, the name of the president, probably because he didn't want to put the tax exempt status in jeopardy. I don't care if he says a name. I really don't. For me, either you have the right to freely speak and freely worship, or you don't. Well, you just have to make a decision. Let me grab a couple of phone calls on this. Then, Carrie, I want to go to that story about the drinking age to 19.
Okay.
I'm willing to hear it. I mean, 21 is an arbitrary number. You can vote at 18. You can go and die for the country at 18. You can run for, you know, offices like for mayor and stuff in some cities at 18. You're considered an adult in just about every state. When you're 18, you can't have a beer. So maybe I miss. I mean, I don't know. You know, for me, either raise everything up to 21, driving age, drinking age, enlisting in the military age, voting age, or, you know, stop deciding, well, you're adult enough for that, but not adult enough for this, which I think is kind of interesting. We'll have that story in its entirety in a second. Luke is in Minnesota. Luke, what's on your mind? Hi.
Mr. Joe, how are you?
Living the dream, man. What's happening?
Hey, you know, I'm a rock rib conservative, but when they started talking about that Johnson Amendment, and I'm actually geek enough that I listened to some of this Capitol hearing stuff on C-SPAN, it makes a lot of sense because when I offer that $25,000 for the wing of the church, that's tax deductible. And my political contribution isn't tax deductible. And so all of a sudden, I send my political contributions to people that I think are going to be good in office, but I don't get to deduct those. But now all of a sudden, I can. And I've got, like, let's say Billy Graham, who's a very influential man, and rightfully so. And I offer that money to him to support me, and the people that are in his congregation decide based on that they're going to vote for me, but I get to deduct that contribution though.
Yes, yeah. I think that you could make it much simpler than that. Just make a rule that those running for a political office can't donate to churches, can't donate to places of worship, because I don't want the pastor or anybody who runs that church to lose their ability to freely speak, to freely express themselves, or to worship as they see fit. So I would make that rule before I would leave the Johnson Amendment in place.
I think I would agree with you, but then isn't that kind of what the Johnson Amendment was intended to do? I'm going back to maybe back in Johnson's
day. No, I you're right. I actually said that before the break. I actually agree with you that that's probably why it was put in place, to make sure somebody isn't bribing pastors to push for them. Right. But again, if you put a rule in place or a law in place or an ordinance or whatever it happens to be that says nobody running for political office or those involved in the campaign or their families can donate to churches, I think that you get rid of that. And if somebody still does, now they can be arrested and charged with a major crime. So I don't want to squelch the ability of my pastor's already telling me, go and vote for the conservative person. You know, the imam is probably already saying, go vote for a fill in the blank person. But they're not allowed to say the name. I think that's kind of un-American.
But then that kind of turns it. It's just basically doing it the other direction, that now I can't, you're limiting my free speech that I can't donate to a church that I want to espouse my message. I mean, isn't that?
No, I think it actually, no, you're making a decision that makes it so. You don't have to run for office. So don't run for office and donate all the money you want to that church. If you're running for office, while you're running, you can't donate to the church. I think that would make sense, at least for something to look at. But to tell somebody because they're running a nonprofit and a place of worship that they're not allowed to have a voice in the upcoming election, a specific voice about a specific candidate, I don't like how that feels to me. It just doesn't feel American to me. I do understand what you're saying, and I appreciate the call, and very well thought out. Okay, so now you're squelching my ability to donate to a church. No, just don't run for office. Donate to the church all you want. But if you're going to donate, if you're going to run for office, because we know that people, that political operatives have in the past, political candidates have in the past donated, quote unquote, donated to the big hospital or the big church or the big whatever, and then they got a favor, they got something in return, or somebody, you know, did something for them, you got to be careful of that. And I think that you can be careful of it without taking the ability of a church or a pastor or a leader at a church, taking that ability away to say the name of a candidate. I don't know. 1-800-383-9624, JoePags.com. When we come back, should the drinking age be back at 19? It was for a while. Should it be there again? Keep it here.
This is the Joe Pags Show.
81. WOAI is an iHeart radio station.
Hey, the Joe Pag Show. Glad to have you here. It is a Thursday. 1-800-383-9624. JoePags.com. So a very simple question. If you're going to call in or you're going to tweet me or Facebook me or whatever, just what's the right age for a drinking age? What should the legal drinking age be in the United States of America? And before I do that, the song Stagger Lee by Lloyd Price is one of my father's favorite songs. And I appreciate Polo adding both that and Little Lat Loopy Lou from the Righteous Brothers. He loved that song, too. Just a quick story. So I'm at the White House 1 week ago today, right?
Yes.
Talking to El Presidente.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's proud, couldn't be more proud. Hearing from a lot of relatives, some relatives know that it happened but are ignoring it. I don't know what their problem is and kiss my ass. my father died in 2010.
Yeah.
And he was a guy that couldn't say to his son, now his daughter's probably was okay, but not to his son, I'm proud of you. There's just something there. It's an old school thing. I knew that he was proud, very proud. I knew that he loved me a ton. I'm not complaining as if I didn't know, I knew. But I was talking to my mom last night on Facebook, and we were chatting about it. I said, yeah, daddy would have, and I call him daddy, and to my sisters, I'll call my mother mommy. It's just what we do, shut up. I was like, yeah, daddy would have called everybody he could find, every relative, extended or not. He would get a hold of everybody and scream it for the mountaintops and tell him, you got to see my son. I made him. I created this human. He's in the White House and talking to the president of the United States. I did it. That's my son. That's my boy.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would have seen me and he would have said, yeah, why didn't you ask him about this? You know what I mean? It wouldn't have been anything other than, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when I was a television news anchor in Albany, New York, at WRGB, and we're heard in Albany, we love you guys up there. It's right in Schenectady, but it's for Albany, Schenectady, Troy, called the Capital Region. I was going to go to Kuwait. The war, because I got the job there in 2002. 9/11 obviously happened just the year before, and I got the job like 9 or 10 months later. And we were going to go to, I was going to go to Kuwait with like a photographer. And my father was, oh, I'm proud of this. This is great. He called me, he said, I talked to your mother about it. We'd prefer if you didn't go. Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And that should be the end of it, yeah.
Right. The caring was there. The pride was there.
Of course.
Just had a hard time saying it to me. So yeah. I really do think that would have been his reaction. He would have been over the moon. He would have been very, very proud. He would have been very, very happy. But he would have said, so when you were there, you couldn't say this? Or he would have given me some crap about what I should have done better.
Yeah.
And it would have been fine. And I would have said, yeah, thanks, Dad. I know. So I'll never forget. I took him to WIOD in Miami. And, of course, we've got a great radio station down in that area now, WFTL. But when I was doing my weekend show down there, and he insisted on coming for some reason. And he's sitting in the studio next to me. And it got to be, you know, good 15 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And every break I would hit, he would argue with me about what I was talking about. Every single break.
Awesome.
I was like, I said, go take a walk. Get out. You know? So that's sort of man. What the relationship was. I would have gotten a kick out of seeing his reaction to this through other people. He wouldn't have said it to me much, other than I could have done something better, or why didn't I do this while I was there? But I would like to have seen his reaction to other people. Mm-hmm. All right, give us that story about the drinking age. Where's it happening? What's the story? Mm-hmm.
This is from USA Today. A bill moving through Wisconsin State House would lower its drinking age to 19, a move its author hopes would undercut college binge drinking in an already booze-soaked state. And the proposal revealed Wednesday comes from Republicans Adam Chartow, Cindy Duchow, and Rob Swearingen, as Madison's WISC-TV reported. Lowering the age could save countless hours and hundreds of thousands of dollars spent enforcing drinking laws among young adults, Jarchow said. I see no reason why we can send young men and women off to war, but they can't have a beer, the bill's author said. Technically, they already can. Teenagers may drink at Wisconsin bars and restaurants with a parent present. And one study already deemed Wisconsin the heaviest drinking state in the union. But Jarchow told WMTV that enabling drinking earlier could actually deflate desires to binge. The idea is if you prohibit people to doing something until they're 21, the natural inclination is to be a little bit rebellious when they're young and then to overindulge, she said. Mothers Against Drunk Driving disagrees, telling WMTV the change would encourage alcohol-fueled accidents. Swearingen, one of the bill's backers, is a former president of the Tavern League of Wisconsin, a trade group of alcohol retailers. The bill faces a huge hurdle in the Minimum Drinking Age Act, introduced by former President Reagan, which ties the state's federal highway funding to a drinking age of 21. Ways around that exist, Jarchow told the station, such as a waiver mechanism. He plans to talk to the Department of Transportation about the bill.
It's interesting. We've got stations there, of course, and we love you guys in Wisconsin. It's very interesting. I remember I was just behind the curve. When the drinking age was 18, I was 17. When I turned 18, it went to 19. When I turned 19, it went to 21. So it was just, I was right behind it. Now, I had a mustache when I was 10, so I never really got carded much. So, and I was never a big drinker. So it wasn't really an issue for me, but I never understood the whole idea that you can legally be an adult, and you are at 18 in every state, yet you can't get a drink. You can go and fight in war, come home, still be 19 or 20, and you can't have a beer.
Yeah.
You could buy cigarettes. And you can vote, but you can't have a shot. It's weird to me. Now, I'm not a drinker, so it doesn't really affect me. I'm 51. If the drinking age were 51, I'd still be fine because it doesn't matter to me. But it does matter it's a legal item product to consume. Why you can't buy it and drink it at 18 doesn't make sense to me. And yes, the highway funds are tied in. Because I always wondered, how did they make every state lower the speed limit to 55? Well, the way they did it was either you lower the speed limit to 55 or we're going to pull your highway funds. Or how did they make every state, you know, raise the drinking age up to 21? And I believe, and again, I'm willing to be wrong here, but I believe on some basis for the military, it stayed 19 for a long time. Because, again, I think for the reasons that I'm saying, if you can go and fight in a war, you should be able to have a beer. But, again, they had highway funds tied to it. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but at some point we should make the decision to be smart and logical. It is illogical to me to make somebody wait 3 more years after they become a legal adult to go and drink. And again, just because alcohol is available doesn't mean people are going to drink and drive. Alcohol is available to me. It's available to you. It's available to Polo. It's available to Karina. We're not out drinking and driving. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. I agree with you.
So because it's available doesn't mean it's going to happen. That's all I'm going to put out there. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. What should the minimum drinking age be? Scott, Illinois, what do you think?
Joe, I wanted to say, when I first started listening to you, I thought that you kind of turned me off because I felt like you didn't, you weren't serious and you joked a lot and, you know, and I'm like, come on, Joe, we got serious stuff. But then after a while, I started to develop a taste for it and I get it. I understand the platform of your show. And I think that's why.
Scott, I want to say this. I want to thank you because it's kind of what we say. When you first hear the show, chances are you're going to hate the show. You're not going to get it. You're not going to know why I'm such an egotistical, loudmouth idiot who's telling fart jokes. You're not going to get what her role is, the girl. But after a little while, it just sort of comes together. Either that or we just beat you until you're numb in the brain and you just don't even realize it anymore. It's one of the two.
Well, and now the way I look at it is it's kind of refreshing because after the other platforms that, and you know who I'm talking about, that we listen throughout the day, it is yes, very sir. Serious. So it is kind of like, oh, okay, now we're still talking about stuff, but it's, you know, you can kind of cut up a little bit and I get it. And this thing was...
Well, what my hope is, Scott, and I'm sorry, there's a little bit of delay. I don't mean to talk over you. What my hope is that people will be entertained. They can smile a little bit. I'll sing like an idiot. Plus, we can be really, really serious when it comes time to get really, really serious.
Yes, sir. And by all means, if you're old enough to bleed on the flag to keep it red and vote for the people who put you in that position, by God, you're old enough to drink a beer. Period.
Scott, call of the year so far for me, my man. I'm just going to hang up. Because he would have said something nice about you. I would have had a Rickroll his ass, and then it would have just spoiled it.
Perfect call but, for you, yes.
Carrie, is that not the quintessential call
it
right
really
there,
is.
Though?
Yep.
Because a lot of people do not understand what the hell we're trying to do here.
They don't get it.
And what we're doing is, I think what radio was created to be, an entertaining partner, a friend, some sort of a companion to you. And you want to hear some serious news? We got it. You want to hear us sing and act stupid? You got it. I really appreciate that he gets it. 1-800-383-9624, JoePags.com. Stay here.
This is the Joe Pags Show.
Hey, great to have you. Welcome to the program. Thanks. It's the Joe Pags Show. Great radio stations everywhere. iHeartRadio, JoePags.com. Do me a favor. Go to JoePags.com. Click on Facebook and like the page. Zuck hates that. Go to Twitter and or follow me on the Twitter, Joe Talk Show. Go to Instagram, Joe Talk Show. I did shoulders today at the gym, Carrie. I was gonna get a video or something.
No.
There's just nowhere to put it. There's nowhere to put the camera to get the right angle.
We couldn't get that.
And as I'm putting the camera, trying to set the camera up, it's just not happening.
Yeah. Well, we missed out on that.
Ladies and some of you gentlemen, sorry. I tried to get you a cheesy gym photo today.
I think they'll be okay.
They're very upset.
I think they'll be okay.
They're very upset they did not get the shoulder day picture or the video.
Yeah.
1-800-383-9624, JoePags.com. Couple of more on the drinking age. Then you see that a guy is like famous now because he served the President of the United States some food?
No.
Guy in Japan.
I haven't seen that. Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Guy in Japan. Famous. You know what I like about this trip? What it shows me about the trip by the president is that no matter how denigrated people are here, no matter how horrible they are to him here, around the world, they still honor the fact that the President of the United States is there.
Yes, that's true. That's very true.
You know, It's like, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I went to the White House last week.
Yeah, you did.
I don't think on the show that I've mentioned this yet, but I actually had an interview with the president.
Yeah.
It's on the Facebook.
You mentioned that a couple of times.
I don't know that I properly promoted the fact that I was going to the White House.
I really think you did.
And that I actually talked with El Presidente. El Presidente. Why is it when I speak Spanish, I lower the voice and get gravelly?
I don't know why you do that.
¿Por qué no queso? I think it's important to know why no cheese.
Yeah. I want to know why.
I'm telling you, guy asked me for directions once and I said, ¿por qué no queso? And he just walked away, shaking his head.
What?
Then he said something in Spanish I don't think I can say. 1-800-383-9624, JoePags.com. Let me go to the phone lines and say hello and welcome to Jordan in San Antonio. Jordan, what's going on? Hi.
Hey, Mr. Pags. Hope you're having a good night. Give my opinion on this whole 19-year-old drinking age thing. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to live when it was 18, but yeah. I think if the world was black and white, then you could say, if you served, you should be able to drink, and so on and so forth. But with so many different stipulations, I feel like addiction is a huge factor in why it's 21, because kids being 19, even 20, just 1 year, I know, but more acceptable, I think, in addiction. So I feel like in terms of responsibility, it's only right to wait as long as possible instead of giving it to them in their first instance of being able to.
Yeah, I guess I'm not following you because I drank when I was younger and I wasn't addicted to it. Certainly, there are alcoholics out there who have a real problem with breaking with the drink and with stopping the disease. I get that. But I'm not really sure what that has to do with age. I mean, do you have some sort of a study that you read that said if you start drinking at 18, you're more apt to be addicted to it than if you're 21? Because I've never read that.
No, actually, I haven't. I'm sorry. my reasoning is simply behind the fact that the brain is simply not fully developed, you know, and I'm not going to say that that's tied. I have read something that ties that to addiction.
Well, Jordan, I got to tell you, man, I'm 51, and my wife will convince you in a second that my brain isn't developed yet. So as far as brain development goes, I mean, I don't know that that's really something we should be considering. I think that we do have to make it black and white. And here's the line When you're on this side of the line, you're not an adult yet. When you're on that side of the line, you are an adult. If you're old enough to drive a car and die for your country and smoke cigarettes and run for election in some places and vote, you know, the next leaders in our communities, you really can't have a beer and you think it's about addiction?
No, I'm not trying to put it all on addiction. I'm sorry if that's how it made it seem, but I just think that there's other things that we need to possibly look at, not necessarily address, yeah. But maybe just open our eyes.
And I'm not saying that you're wrong about that, but you listen to my show, right? I mean, I like to have something to back people up when they say that. I'm giving you fact about what society says makes an adult. And I'm just wondering if there was something that you read. If not, that's cool. I mean, you're completely, you know, absolutely able to give your opinion here. I like to base it on fact. And the fact is, society says you're an adult at a certain age. Now, people want to know, Jordan, first of all, how old are you?
I'm only actually 20.
Okay, so you can't even drink yet?
No, sir.
Have you ever had one?
Yes, I have.
Did you get addicted to it?
No, I didn't.
Are you drunk right now?
No, I'm not.
All right, Jordan. Love you like a brother. Get off my phone. 1-800-383-961. Carrie, you had to know I was going to ask him that.
Probably so, yeah.
You had to see that coming.
Did you you saw my message?
No, what did you say? What?
You were talking about your brain not being developed or your wife thinking that?
Right.
You're 51. I just messaged you saying
Let me ask you something. What? Do you want people to know that this is who you really are?
No.
Because here's the way it
really
looks. So far, you've got the big, loudmouth, egotistical, big-headed guy who's just, oh, blah, blah. Look at me, Joe Pags. Oh, I went to the White House. Did I mention that, by the way?
Yes,
we've got the
times.
Poor, beaten down, not treated fairly girl from the cornfields of Nebraska, Cornhusker land, where you won the title in 1994 of the Husker Championship.
I did,
You really want people to know this is who you really are? Because during the show, this is what Carrie will do. I'll tell them. I'm fine with it.
Well, I was just saying.
Because I said my wife would say I'm 51. She could make a good argument that my brain hasn't developed yet. And of course, you said I second your wife's opinion. See, this is what people need to understand. This is who you truly are.
Well, I'm just kind of joking. Okay? Not really, but kind of.
So it's really, let's be honest here. Mm-hmm. I'm the one emotionally abused on the program.
Oh, please. Oh, no, you're not. No.
I leave the station in tears every night.
Nobody's buying that.
No. I'm weeping in my hanky.
Yeah, nobody's
every
feeling
night, every
sorry
night.
For you.
And I get home after the long ride, and my wife is like, what's the matter, honey? I was like, Carrie. She's like, damn it, that Carrie again.
Actually,
I wish I could sell that. I wish I could pretend that was real. The problem is, when you came over the one time, you and my wife were over the corner laughing at me the entire time. I'm like, what's wrong with you two?
Yeah, she was telling me stories. Yeah, that was good. We should come over again. I need some more stories.
Well, how many invitations have you gotten since then? I can't remember.
Zero.
There you go. Nobody ever said I wasn't smart. 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. Gabriel, Alabama, what's going on?
Hey, I'm on the air.
Yeah, you are. What's going on? Me too.
I'm basically famous. I'm going to put this on my resume now.
Oh, you are absolutely famous. In fact, I'm like, holy crap, it's Gabriel.
Yeah, I'm calling from heaven. Basically.
Okay.
I was going to chime in. You know, you're forgetting a good point about how ridiculous the drinking age is. At 18, you can make the decision to go in massive debt over your education, but you can't have a beer.
That's true. And because of that massive debt, you should be allowed to, right?
Well, sometimes it might drive you to want to drink.
All right, I'll let you go. So there you go. Gabriel was more enamored with the fact that he made it on the radio than anything.
He's
Gabriel,
famous.
We love you. I was actually, Polo, let me ask you something, because I know you pretty well. Been great friends for 12 years. You've been running the board of my show and taking care of me for 12 years. I'm guessing you were right on the button when Gabriel got on the air.
Well, yes, and yes. I'll just leave it
and
at
what?
Yes.
Say it.
Well, because I'm training someone, and so we were both, like, with our hand ready. So
because Gabriel, he was so comfortable that it felt clear to me that he was going to just blurt out an F-bomb or something.
Yeah, and it was just kind of weird because the guy that I'm training just happens to have the same name, Gabriel.
There you go. So I'm telling you, it was in the stars. I had to let him go. We love him. He's probably calling back right now going, oh, it's on the radio. Why can't I hang up? 1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. Here's the headline from Fox News. Trump's hamburger sells out in Japan. Have you heard this?
No.
Again, it's the power of the presidency. Other countries are eating it up. They're loving the fact that he's there. In our country, we're treating our own president of the United States like garbage, and I hate it. Here's the story. And it looks like a delicious burger. I don't know if that's really the burger. Mm. Yeah. They're showing a picture of the burger, and it looks really good. During his visit to Japan, President Donald Trump sat down for a burger at a Tokyo restaurant that specializes in American beef, a move that's since been called one of the most Trump things ever. However, his classically American meal has skyrocketed one small business owner in Tokyo to fame. When Yatuka Yanagisawa, which is actually a famous name, Yanagisawa is a great name of a saxophone manufacturer. Oh, yeah, they're good. Owner of Munch's Burger Shack in the Minato Ward in Tokyo, was chosen to serve the President of the United States. He accepted the opportunity, and it's been paying off ever since. Sora New 24, I guess that's the news outlet there, reported that customers have been coming to the 40-year-old chef's two Burger Shack locations by the hordes to buy the Trump burger, a Colby Jacket cheese. It'd have to be Colby Jack cheese, right?
Yeah, not jacket.
It says jacket. Colby Jacket cheeseburger. You know, can we proofread, please?
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to get a Colby cheese jacket. That'd be kind of cool.
Probably so.
A Colby Jack cheeseburger made with 100% American Angus beef. It costs 1,200 yen. You know how much that is in American
money? I do not know how much.
$10.54.
Oh, wow.
Screw that.
Oh, that's not too bad for a good burger.
I'll get 10 burgers down at the McDonald's. I don't care. I'll get a Whataburger, save a couple of bucks. It was reported also that the location in Taranomen, I think, I don't know Japanese names, had completely sold out of the burgers by 2:30 p.m. the day after the restaurant appeared on television, revealing that Trump was a customer. The Shiba location was closed Monday, driving even more customers to the smaller Taranomen outpost, I think. Now, there's a fancy box and everything. Let me see if they put on there that Trump ate it. That'd be kind of smart if they put it on the box. It's not on the box right now, no. Yanagisawa said that he was sent to the golf course to cook his signature burger for the two leaders. President Trump shook his hand and said the well-done burger was very good. Munch's Burger Shack, which had previously been referred to by locals and foreigners as the best burger joint in Tokyo, an impressive accolade in the district that has several burger restaurants and international cuisines, is now even busier than it previously was, creating more of a wait to dine inside. But as customers claim, it's worth it. Can you imagine? Mm. You make a burger, the president gets the burger, you're now world famous, and they're flying out the door.
That's pretty awesome.
He can't make them fast enough. And maybe I'm the idiot, but you open both locations. What's that?
No,
I couldn't hear you what I said. Maybe I'm the idiot. You said something.
No,
see, I'm telling you, the guy who called in, he said he now gets the show.
Things.
He's starting to realize who the mean one, who the antagonist is on the program.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the protagonist. You're the antagonist. Because you're needy.
No. I'm not needy.
So, I like the Donald. I don't know if I mentioned this. I hung out with him last week. I was at the White House, actually.
Yeah, you did.
But I can't have a well-done burger.
What do you have?
I don't care. I don't care what they say about the Ebola, whatever. And people don't do what I do. This is what I do. You do whatever you want to do.
How are you eating that?
I'm getting a medium rare burger. I'm eating a medium rare burger.
No, medium rare steak.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. A medium rare burger? No.
I'm getting a medium rare burger. And you know what I'm doing when I'm making that burger on the grill?
What?
As I'm making the patty, I'm shoving jalapenos in that burger.
Now, that would be good, but you got to cook it all the way. You need to. Medium well.
Medium rare is all the way.
Medium rare, not for a hamburger. No.
I want that sucker mooing.
Medium well.
1-800-383-9624, joepags.com. Stay right here.
It's radio.
It's radio 1200, WOAI.
Pretty great tweet. Guy tweets, I so wish I had an echo button. You don't! 1-800-383-9624 JoePags.com. Exactly right.
I should have one.
So, would you ever look? I'm a fan of the current president. Wasn't necessarily a fan of the last one. Would you ever, though, if you liked the president or disliked the president, either, would you ever say, I got to go eat that burger he ate?
No, I would not.
Is that a Japanese tradition?
I really don't know.
Because it's not like you're eating the actual burger he took a bite out of. Not, I mean, that'd be kind of gross, too, but there are some people who think that. Right. But, I must have the burger Donald Trump ate.
No, I'm good.
I don't know. I mean, it might be something that in other countries makes sense. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Let me go to the phone lines and say hello and welcome to Stephen in College Station. Hi, Stephen. What's going on?
Hey, Joe. I really kind of agree with your sentiment that it doesn't make sense that a 18-year-old would go off to die for his country but can't drink alcohol. But your previous caller did have a good point. There is evidence.
Hey, Steven, stop. I have to ask you, what the hell's going on with that kid in the background?
Who knows?
He's having a good time, man. It's a happy child, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He's not getting his way.
All right, go ahead. There's some sort of a study that you're going to cite. Go ahead.
Yeah, so there's a book out called The Teenage Brain that talks about a lot of studies that's been done in the last 10, 15 years on the impact of alcohol and drugs on teenage brains, including up to 18 years old and beyond, because he's right. There are the 18-year-old brain is not fully developed. And what happens with addiction is what it really is overlearning. And when you're in your teenage years, your brain is ready to learn. And so if you're getting drugs, you're overlearning, including alcohol, you're overlearning, and you're creating neural pathways that are going to be more easily toward, you know, more likely to be addicted. And so it makes it more likely that you will struggle.
I don't have it in front of me, but Steven, I'm going to take your word for it. Okay. And I'm not saying that you're making it up. I believe that there's a book that some guy says he did some studies and whatever, or some lady. All right. So let's take that as fact. I've always been consistent, and I'll remain consistent on this. If your brain isn't developed enough to handle a beer or cigarettes or whatever else, then raise the age for everything to 21. You can't vote till you're 21. You can't go to war till you're 21. You can't run for office anywhere until you're 21. I mean, if the 18-year-old brain is so mushy that if you have a beer, you're gonna suddenly have some sort of different reaction to it, then let's take that study, sounds scientific, let's take that study and apply it to everything. You are not an adult legally in America till you're 21. I mean, I would accept that. I just don't like the idea that you're kind of an adult over here, but you're kind of not an adult over there. You know what I mean?
I'm with you on that. I agree. And I would probably tend towards the move more requirements at 21.
I got you, brother. No, I look, again, it makes sense. And you know me, I like to have studies cited. I haven't seen that study. I'll take him at his word for the sake of argument, and it probably is real. So let's move everything to 21. Because if you're not ready at 21 to have a beer because your brain will freak out and you'll learn some different way or something, then you're not ready to decide who the president's going to be. And you're not ready to go and buy a cigarette. You're not ready to go and fight a war. You're not ready to handle the job as mayor of a city. Let's do some pop culture. Yep. Dirty pop. Hi, Apollo. What's happening?
All right. So, did you hear about John Hillerman passing away? Played Higgins on.
I did. I just saw that. Yeah. Yeah. Now, for you, which is he most famous for?
I would say Higgins, because I know he was also on the Love Boat.
As the voice of Kit.
He wasn't the voice of Kit.
Yes, he was. Wasn't he?
No, that was. Gosh, I can't remember his name. He played.
Are
Mr.
you sure? I thought it was the same guy.
No, he played Mr. Feeny on Boy Meets World.
Are you sure?
I bet you $1 billion.
I don't know, because John Hillerman was faking that British accent on Magnum.
Right, but it wasn't him.
I thought it was him. No. You're probably right. So he passed away. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
We got to go. Wish we had more time. Bye.
You're listening to Joe Pags.